From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 14th, 2017. And on this day, solitary confinement in Maine and why the State Department of Corrections is leading the move to reduce its use. And Governor Paula Page nominates a new public advocate. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First tonight, we have our first major candidate to replace Governor Paula Page as governor. State Treasurer Terry Hayes has filed papers to run for the office as an independent for the 2018 elections. She says she hopes to run as a publicly financed candidate under the Clean Elections Law, but realizes the legislature is considering eliminating that program for gubernatorial candidates. Hayes says she plans to keep her job as state treasurer during the race.
I have never yet in my career underperformed in my current position in order to earn the next one, and I don't intend to do that this time around. I intend to meet my obligations and then some. I will continue to perform my role as treasurer.
Hayes is a Democrat turned independent who was nominated for her post by Republicans. Governor Paula Page has nominated a former Democratic lawmaker to become the state's next public advocate for utility customers. Saco attorney Barry Hobbins has been tapped for the post currently held by Timothy Schneider. As Steve Missler reports, Schneider's chances of getting another four-year term were doomed after he angered the governor for attempting to broker a deal on a landmark solar bill.
The governor picked Schneider for the public advocate post 4 years ago and seemed pleased with the Portland attorney's work on behalf of Maine utility customers until last year. That's when Schneider supported a bill aimed at balancing a call to expand the state's solar portfolio with easing the effects on the ratepayers, whose energy bills help subsidize the industry.
That's the thing that I know he's publicly expressed that he is not happy with me about.
LePage blasted the bill, and he worked hard to make sure it was defeated. Along the way, he described Schneider's appointment in 2013 as, quote, one of his worst decisions as governor. Undaunted, Schneider continued to support the bill, which died after House Republicans helped sustain LePage's veto last session. Schneider says he knew the solar bill might cost him, but he felt the proposal was in the best interest of ratepayers.
Yeah, the office is independent, which means we're able to take positions that the governor doesn't agree with, and I took that independence seriously. So I knew that if we took a position that the governor did not support, that this was a risk.
While Schneider's fate seemed sealed last year, his successor was unknown until Friday. Barry Hobbins has served 13 terms in the legislature, where he forged a reputation as a dealmaker. He also served on the Energy and Utilities Committee, the same panel that will vet his nomination as public advocate. Hobbins is also known as one of the few Democrats with a working relationship with the governor. He has been critical of Democrats for their withering criticism of LePage. That stance, as well as his failed bid to become Speaker of the House in 2015, put him out of favor with some members of his own party. Last year, Hobbins attempted to take a vacant Senate seat, but was defeated by Senator Justin Chenette in the Democratic primary. During that campaign, the governor spoke fondly of Hobbins, advocacy that may have actually hurt the Democrat more than it helped. If confirmed by the Senate, Hobbins would serve a four-year term. In a press release, LePage praised Hobbins and blasted the state's energy policies. He made no mention of Schneider. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Last month, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer issued what's considered to be one of the court's strongest opinions criticizing the use of solitary confinement. He acknowledged the growing body of scientific evidence that prolonged isolation causes severe anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, and hallucinations. And like Justice Anthony Kennedy did 2 years earlier, Breyer questioned whether it violates constitutional protections against cruel and unusual punishment. Around the country and the world, there is a growing movement calling for an end to solitary, also known as administrative segregation, restrictive housing, or lockdown. And as Susan Sharon reports, here in Maine, the Department of Corrections is leading the effort to curtail its use.
To get to the special management unit at the Maine State Prison, you have to walk down a long corridor and pass through half a dozen heavy locked doors. Here, confinement means virtual isolation for 22 to 23 hours a day. Phone calls and non-contact visits are limited. Prisoners are handcuffed and shackled whenever they come out of their cells.
The most dangerous, most difficult inmates are here, and that's based upon not necessarily what they did on the outside, but what occurred on the inside.
Warden Randy Liberty says those offenses range from assaults on staff or other inmates to stabbings and even homicide. Prior to 2015, there were typically 45 to 50 prisoners housed in the SMU. On a recent visit, there were just 7. It's part of an ongoing effort to reform the use of solitary confinement at the prison. And Liberty says Maine leads the nation in the fewest number of inmates in restrictive housing.
It was obvious that no good comes of locking people away in a cell for 22 hours a day. And we have to ask ourselves, if the citizens of the state of Maine are paying $44,000 a year to house someone here at the Maine State Prison, when the person's released, they should be treated and programmed for the reasons why they arrived.
Until recently, one of those prisoners was 36-year-old Jason Potter of Augusta. Prison administrators say he was sent to the SMU after he orchestrated a stabbing. Potter says he spent 13 months in segregation there.
When I first went down there, it was a lot different than it is now. In the past, I don't know, 6 months or so, they went from basically like a warehousing. They put you in there. Now they switched over to this whole new program and level system where you can actually earn your transition back.
Potter says this is a big change in the traditional disciplinary culture of the prison. Earning the transition back to general population is a matter of proving yourself. Complete certain classes and programs, reach the next level. And with each level come more privileges.
Once you get to level 3, you actually start getting more freedom. You still get more freedom in level 2 because you're allowed more electronics, stuff like that. But once you're in level 3, then you come out without chains. That's like the big test.
Hey, did you get the challenge and stuff figured out? Everything's running okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dr. Ryan Thornell is an associate commissioner in the Department of Corrections who's been tasked with continuing reforms to the use of solitary confinement, begun in Maine more than a decade ago. During a regular visit to the SMU, he stops by the cell of a prisoner who wants to know about a new policy for good behavior.
Well, I don't know what they give out for documentation, but you'll find out. So I'll have him working on it.
Thornell says the goal of reform isn't only about reducing the number of inmates who are locked away. He says it's also about accountability on the part of the DOC.
Whether it's timeliness of reviews, case plan information, programming that we make available to them, how their interactions with staff are going to be, we hold ourselves accountable to make sure that those things are actually delivered upon.
We're heading to the closed unit. I have a total capacity of 490. Right now, my unit counts about 444, I think, I read today.
That accountability falls squarely on the shoulders of this man, Anthony Cartledge. He's the newly promoted director of operations and programming at the prison.
You give me all my gray hair while I'm working.
Some of the inmates who come out of solitary confinement transition to a step-down facility called the Structured Living Unit, where they are allowed to come out of their cells for several hours a day, eat meals, and take classes in small groups. It's a way to socialize them gradually. Others are released to the closed custody unit.
Closed custody guys are guys that are very violent, very assaultive. That's the true close maximum security prisoner. It's like Potter. He's in the closed unit. He will have an opportunity, if his behavior allows, to maybe work through the medium unit, which has less restrictions.
Cartledge says initially some of the correction staff were wary about Jason Potter going back into general population.
When Potter come out, I talked to the staff and I said, listen, this is what he's coming out, and we want to make sure that you're aware he's coming out, that we want him to reintegrate back into population. We have to take that risk. And I've had hardly any pushback from staff, so they're beginning to shift, I think, to the risk reduction model.
What they've seen, says Cartledge, is that disciplinary problems have been reduced under the new model. Data show that since 2015, assaults are down, and the number of prisoners being sent back to restrictive housing has dropped as well. Prisoner advocates applaud the reforms and the results, but Joe Jackson, a former inmate and spokesperson for the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition, says there remains a need for more transparency in the prison grievance process, a way for prisoners to challenge solitary confinement in the first place, or a decision not to let them out.
The way the process is working, and even though with reforms made to it, there's a lot of rubber stamping of no, this grievance isn't going anywhere, and that we're listening to whatever the staff is telling us.
Jackson points to a 70% recidivism rate for inmates as evidence of the rehabilitation challenges still facing the Maine State Prison. Zach Hyden of the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine agrees that more reforms are needed.
But it's important to keep sight of how far we've come and also how much of an example Maine State Prison is for the rest of the country. The Maine Department of Corrections has shown that you can reduce the use of solitary confinement and keep the prison safe.
Associate DOC Commissioner Ryan Thornell says it's unlikely the need for a special management unit will ever be eliminated. But he says the goal will be to move away from the long-term isolation of inmates. And by long-term, he says he means prisoners spending 6 months or more in restrictive housing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And this is Maine Public Radio. The psychological effects of prolonged solitary confinement on inmates and efforts to decrease its use are also the focus of a new two-hour Frontline documentary that's airing Tuesday night on Maine Public Television. The Last Days of Solitary is a follow-up to the 2014 documentary Solitary Nation, which gave viewers extraordinary access to life inside the special management unit at the Maine State Prison. Dan Edge is one of the producers of the film, which spans a three-year period as the prison implements reforms. Speaking from London, Edge said the difference between what the crew saw in 2013 and what they saw when they came back 2 years later was stark.
When we were there in 2013, we were seeing violence of one sort or another every day. I mean, every day in the special management unit, sometimes many, many times a day. You know, we'd spend evenings there where the officers were having to deal with self-harm incidents, with multiple extractions, with multiple flooding of the unit by inmates.
Much of this violence, including the self-harm, is shown in the film. But after Maine State Prison officials reduced the number of prisoners in the SMU and began offering more programming, therapy, and opportunities for inmates to transition back into general population, Edge says it changed the atmosphere of the unit.
Our team saw no self-harm when they were filming this year. You know, heard a few reports of it, but we didn't see anything. We didn't see any extractions. This stuff still happens. You know, it's a prison and they're very difficult and sometimes ill people there. Well, now the prison says that self-harm is down more than 80% over the last 5 years, and that certainly tallies with what we witnessed.
The film also follows up with several Maine State Prison inmates who were in solitary confinement in the first film, one of whom was released from prison and later returned after being involved in a shooting. Edge says he hopes the takeaway is that efforts like Maine's to reform the use of solitary confinement can be replicated around the country. Last Days of Solitary airs Tuesday night at 9 on Maine Public Television. And when Susan Sharon was reporting her story, we brought our video camera into the Maine State Prison. You can take a look inside at our website, mainepublic.org. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Friday, April 14th. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.